The Volume.
The Draymond Green Show, presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. No better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. There's a lot of reasons. It's America's number one sportsbook. Incredibly easy to use. Super safe, totally secure. Super fast payouts in as quick as 2 hours. You're not going to get that anywhere. Also, same game parlay bets, live betting. It's the best. There really is no competition. By the way, I hope you people are following my college football bets. I'm sort of red hot. I've won 11 of 12. Hey, if you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I did it in 15 seconds. Get started now. Sign up. Please use the promo code Colin so they know we sent you. Please use the promo code Colin, C-O-L-I-N. FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up.
Welcome back to the Draymond Green Show. This is our third episode. And I think this will be another good one. I will be joined a little later by a longtime teammate, champion, NBA Finals MVP, All-Star. And what you'll find even more interesting on this episode, venture capitalist, my teammate, Andre Iguodala. But first, we are going to talk about last night's game, the Warriors versus the Suns, which I guess people may have enjoyed it. I didn't quite enjoy it that much, but nonetheless, I did enjoy the atmosphere. It was an incredible atmosphere. It was playoff-like atmosphere, and you know, it's the ones that you love to play in and you get up for. Obviously, Tuesday night in the association, number one versus number two in the West, in the NBA, actually. You know, a matchup that we could definitely see sometime down the line in May. So it was a very important game. And obviously, Phoenix took the game. My assessments on the game, I think number one, you got to give Phoenix a lot of credit. Their defense was very stellar last night. I think they did an incredible job on everybody, making it tough. They made the plays they needed to make down the stretch offensively. And in saying all of that, we were on the road with 24 turnovers. And yet with 2.5 minutes to go, I had a left-hand layup streaking down the middle of the floor with a chance to cut it to one. And so in saying that, I love where we are still as a team. I think I'm not sure you will find a game where myself, Steph, and Wiggs will play worse than we played last night. And like I said, we still had a chance to win that game right down the stretch 3 minutes to go. Got to give a lot of credit to Chris Paul. He did what Chris Paul does. He carries his teams. Deep Book went out towards the end of the first half. And Chris Paul just did what he does. He carries teams. He makes timely plays. He gets everybody involved. He picks and chooses when he needs to get his shot going. And he did that last night. And one thing about Chris Paul that's interesting, and other guys in this league, is when you talk about winners, we all tend to turn to the guys who's won championships. And don't get me wrong, winning championships is extremely important. Like, you want to win championships. You play sports, you want to win championships. It's the holy grail. It's what we're all playing for. You want to be the last team standing. But Chris Paul is one of those guys that's interesting where he has not won a championship. Last year was his first year, year 16, I think, of playing in the NBA Finals. But I personally think Chris Paul is a winner. Like, he wins year in, year out. I mean, they sent him to OKC to pretty much lie on his deathbed. Not only did he not lie on his deathbed, he took that team to the playoffs. Because he did so well, Sam Presti worked with him to get him to a situation that he wanted to be in, and now we see what he's doing with the Phoenix squad. And so that's just an interesting thought that I have, and when I'm just sitting and dissecting basketball, dissecting careers, dissecting resumes, that's one that's always interesting for me. And like I said, that's Chris Paul. But that's not only Chris Paul. There are other guys in this league who Jimmy Butler, who's won everywhere he's gone, never won a championship, but he's a winner. Like, he's won, he's made teams win everywhere he's gone. And so, you know, that's just an interesting thing to me, especially when you get into the debate of Hall of Fame and all-time greats and NBA 75 lists, all of these things. That's an interesting one for me. But like I said, back to the game. I thought our defense was pretty good in the first half. Thought we could have definitely cleaned up some things, and then obviously in the second half as well. But again, it all goes back to you have 23 turnovers. Can you get your defense set? Like, how many times do we get a chance to actually set our defense? You couple that with the shooting nights that we had, you're kind of in transition all night. And so I like where our defense is. I think we'll continue to get better. And I think for the most part, like I said, with all of that went on last night, we still gave up 104 points. And granted, they didn't have D-Book in the second half, but that's a good basketball team, you know, and they just keep it rolling. And that's what they did last night. DeAndre Ayton played really well. I thought he was extremely aggressive from the very beginning of the game. He continued that on throughout the entire game. He had a really good game. Jay Crowder had a good game, struggled with. He had a couple threes in the first quarter, and then it was in foul trouble for pretty much the rest of the half. But hit some big threes in that second half last night that kind of catapulted them to the win. So they, you know, they had a mixture of guys playing well. Mikal Bridges defensively was an animal. I mean, he was incredible defensively. All their guys were really good defensively. They were really good defensively as a team. But Mikal Bridges, who's the head of the snake for them, I thought he did an incredible job defensively of just chasing Steph around, being in passing lanes, clogging up the lane when he had the opportunity. I thought he did a really good job. That takes us to Friday's matchup, which I am obviously excited about. Home and home. They were home. Now we got an opportunity of them coming into our house. You never want to lose two in a row, so you want to right the ship. Our guys also know what to expect now, although I thought guys really stepped up to the challenge. But you've seen this team now. You know what to expect. And coming back Friday, we expect a better outcome. And also in this week in NBA news, but Warriors news, we got a chance to see Klay Thompson. You know, I know everyone's seen the highlights flying around from him scrimmaging with the Santa Cruz Warriors. And man, was it beautiful and exciting to see him moving the way he's moving, shooting the ball the way he was shooting it. But more importantly, seeing him happy, seeing him with a smile on his face because he's getting the opportunity to, again, to do what he loves to do, which is play basketball. If you know Klay Thompson, he loves playing basketball. He loves Rocco, and now he loves his boat. And you know, we all saw him last week sitting on the bench with a towel on over his head after the game and just having a moment. And we all sympathize with him. And saying that, and like I said, and seeing him back on the court this week in action and actually playing and competing, such a beautiful thing. It definitely gets us even more excited to get him back into the fold, one step closer to having our full team and really making a run at this thing. It feels good. The vibe around the team feels right from the front office to the ownership group, the front office, the coaching staff, players, training staff, video staff. It just feels great. And obviously winning helps. Winning cures all, as we like to say in this business, but it's a beautiful thing. So looking forward to the problem of incorporating Klay back into the lineup. You know, we obviously have started off great, and that's a great problem to have. You incorporating a Hall of Famer, an NBA champion, one of the best snipers we've ever seen in NBA history, one of the better two-way players we've seen in a long time. I can't wait to add him back to the fold. And obviously, you know, as a facilitator, Pastor's Paradise just get better. So I am thrilled and was extremely thrilled and happy to see those highlights as we all got a chance to see this weekend and just him really doing his thing and looking like Klay Thompson. Obviously, I'm not expecting him to come back and hit his first shots when he returns. I am not expecting him to come back and even look as great as he did the other day, although that's what we witnessed, because I just don't think it's fair to put those expectations on him. and the road that he's had. You let him gracefully return and come into his own as his body allows. And so that's what I'm looking forward to. Like I said, it was beautiful and exciting to see on social media. And they had obviously showed us the clips before they hit social media. But it was beautiful to see. I'm extremely happy for him and happy for everyone who's affected by that. You know, you always hear people say, come up to us and say, man, I've been through some tough times, but the one constant in my life is the Warriors has brought happiness to my household. You know, and so all the people that's been affected by that, you know, and you have great success and you do things in the community and people really draw an attachment to you. And when you draw that attachment and you have that attachment, Klay Thompson has done a lot for this community, a lot for this organization. When he go down, you feel that, you know? And so I'm happy for everyone involved, but most importantly to Klay, for Klay, who's been the one who's had to endure the rehab sessions, the pain, the surgeries, the doubt. You know, I'm extremely happy for him. Couldn't be more thrilled.
I'm curious about what you said, how it's an interesting problem to have incorporating Klay back to this roster, because assuming Klay is coming back as a starter, which I feel like is a fair assumption, that means either Jordan Poole or, if you guys go small, Kayvon Looney are going to the bench, which is an interesting situation to have, especially considering how well Jordan's been playing. So how do you anticipate that working for Jordan, assuming he's the guy that's going to be moved to the bench? Do you anticipate him having any trouble with that? I feel like it works as him in the six-man role, but it's still a pretty big change.
It's definitely a big change. I think no matter what, and I say this with my analyst hat on, my podcast host hat on, not from my actual being as the basketball player that does play for this team. I say this strictly from just a basketball standpoint and not having any knowledge on the situation, because it's not something that we've spoke about, myself as a leader of this team with Coach Kerr, or with Coach Kerr just amongst the rest of the team. Like, that, it hasn't been mentioned once. And so I don't have any more knowledge other than what I think could possibly happen, which is what you just said. Does Jordan move to the sixth man? What I do know is, and I don't know this because someone's told me, I know this because I'm not an idiot, whether Jordan's coming off the bench or starting, he's going to play 30 minutes a night. And so that's going to remain constant regardless. Does he continue to start? Do we go small and move me to the five? And Kevon moves to the bench. I'm not sure what that looks like, because obviously Loon isn't scoring 30 on a given night or 20 on a given night like Jordan is, but he is extremely important to our lineup. What he does on the defensive end is incredible. And what he does as a screener on the offensive end is incredible. And so, you know, one of those guys that just always in the right place, know what to do, cover for other guys, just really has a thorough understanding of the game. If Kevon was to move to the bench and then I move to the five, that also changes our defensive lineups as well. You know, and so I think there's a lot that needs to happen. I think Coach Kerr will definitely tinker with the lineup some, because you have to figure it out, right? You have to figure out, like, what's best? Like, what's our best lineup? And by the way, you may then figure out that our best lineup, we don't want to start the game with that lineup. Like, there are so many things as a coach and directions that you can go. But as I said, that's a good problem to have. And when I say good problem to have, and as far as incorporating Klay back into the lineup, that's because the one thing that we do have is depth. And we've shown that throughout the course of this year. So that changes the rotations. You know, with Klay coming back, it's just naturally going to change the rotations. And so when I say the problem of incorporating him back into the lineup, by all means, don't ever think it's a bad problem. It is a problem that we have to face, because now you have to change the rotations. You have to then figure out which lineups works with the way that you want the rotations to flow. And so it's not just like, oh, you plug him back in and things are just what they were. Like, you have to do some figuring out. And so when I say good problem, that's what I mean. It's just like, we have some things to figure out once he gets back. And that's the good issue. And other news around the association, we have a brother of mine, a close friend, a guy who I won a gold medalist with, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins, signing with the Milwaukee Bucks. I am extremely thrilled for him to sign with the Bucks because Cousins had a tough go since the injuries. And obviously that's something that none of us can forecast. Obviously that's something that we all face the risk of in playing and doing what we do. And you never want to see a guy go down to injuries, which has changed the course of his career. But to see him get another opportunity to continue to show that he's still an NBA player, as I think he's shown in each stop that he's had over the last couple of years, is that he's still an NBA player. No, he's not DeMarcus Cousins that's still getting 30 and 20, but he's still DeMarcus Cousins that can be more productive than a lot of big men that are in the league. So to see him get the opportunity to go to the defending champs and just be DeMarcus, play his game, obviously, I mean, even with the Clippers, you can see the growth in him as a player, not getting technical fouls like he was, not getting hung up on things that he can't really change, just playing his game. And so to see him with the opportunity with the Bucks, I'm thrilled. I'm always happy for him and Morgan, and just having the opportunity to continue his career and do what he loved. We all have a very finite window of time to do what we love to do in playing basketball, because as we know, Father Time is undefeated. And so to see him with the opportunity to continue to play the game that he loved, that I love, that we all love dearly, it's incredible. And I'm, as always, I'm rooting for him. I am honored today to be sharing in this podcast, in this episode, with one of my favorite teammates of all time, a guy who, you know, you always hear about myself, Steph, and Clay, and us three being together for all of those years. And often, when I am asked about that, I often say, yeah, us three, which is true. We've all grown together. We've come into ourselves together, you know, and just started from the bottom and all worked our way to the top together. But the one guy that I always mention in that is the guy who kind of showed us the way, who came on and was the veteran, to adding a veteran to us young guys who kind of had a good thing blossoming. And then we add Andre and everything takes off. So I am honored to have to share today with you guys just a conversation between myself, a big brother of mine, the guy who, you know, you've always heard of Draymond's the leader, the guy who I turn to when I don't know where to turn throughout this whole run. Andre, my brother, thank you for coming on, man.
No, I appreciate you having me, man. And I'm just really proud of you, what you built for yourself. And it's very rare that, you know, players actually build something with a real foundation to it off the court. So it's a beautiful thing. Even going back to our conversation that Bob Myers was having to you last night, like, you know, I won't say what he said, but, you know, that meant a lot to me that he was comfortable having that conversation with you. But it just shows how he feels about you in terms of like your ability to do things, your potential outside the game of basketball, which is tremendous. So it's a beautiful thing to see.
I appreciate that. You know, I am excited to have you on the show for reasons that I don't think most people are going to expect, and we'll get to that. But obviously, first, we'll kick it off. You know, your first year back with the Warriors after being gone for 2 years, two worst years of my career, might I add. You know, but you left, you were traded, and then you signed. You didn't go to the Grizzlies. But then you got traded to Miami, signed the extension, went to the NBA Finals the first year, was having a good year last year, and obviously it ended short for y'all. But now you're back. What brought you back to the Warriors?
Man, I think it was just it was a really good experience. you know, seeing something on the other end of the spectrum, you know, and seeing how you can have success on both sides, you know, how our environment is a little bit more laxed, you know, a little bit, you know, more, you know, it's got some hippie vibes to it, you know, go as you please at your own pace. And then Miami is kind of like, you know, straight and narrow, you know, everybody in formation. And, you know, I could see weaknesses in both, because both have had a lot of success. You know, Pat Riley is probably one of the most successful, you know, player coaches, GMs in NBA history. He's done it at every level. And, you know, we had success here and I saw some flaws here. And just being at those two places, I try to take a step back and see, you know, appreciate the value and the approach on both sides. And when I was there, I saw some things we did with the Warriors that I can, you know, bring to some of the players to the team. You know, some guys may not be as mentally strong at their young age and, you know, nudge them and get them to, you know, smile, open up a little bit. But then, you know, coming back, you know, I didn't know my body was going to feel as good as it did at the end of last year. You know, I thought maybe that might be it. You know, you never know when the end is coming, but I thought, you know, the body reacted better than I thought. And it'd be a beautiful thing to, you know, go back and play with my brothers and seeing what I saw in Miami and how I could kind of bring that added value. And it's kind of like who you are. You know, it's funny. It's like, you know, you're so brash and you're like so competitive and you have that fire and, you know, that's the Heat culture. And I was able to appreciate that even more going there. And I'm like, damn. You know, the Draymonds are even more valuable than I thought. And I saw it up close every day. So, you know, now you see me now when you go off on people and I'm just like, oh, he got a point. Like, I can't really argue with that. You know what I mean? Because I've seen like there's a lot of value in that, especially in our environment where coach empowers all the guys to just play with, you know, and think freely and think more than themselves. And sometimes that can bite you in the butt. So you got to have to kind of have to reel it back in, but still have give them the confidence to go out there and execute at a high level. So I just thought it was, you know, perfect timing, you know, still got some time left to come back and why not end it, you know, with my brothers and, you know, what better way to start it than the way we have so far.
No, I think I definitely see, obviously we all know your experience and what you bring to the table from previous years, but I also see growth in your leadership and handling young guys because, you know, for us at first, like when we were first going through our run, we were the young guys, right? Like, and it was totally different than the young guys of today. But, you know, I think, you know, there's no secret that, you know, the Warriors are kind of in this space of mixing experience and younger talent and blending the two together and trying to make both ends meet. It is going incredible, as we know, sitting here at 18-3 after last night's loss, which we'll talk about. But it's going great. And I've been watching you a lot just because I'm always trying to learn and always observing and just trying to keep a pulse and understand what's going on. And just the way that you handle these young guys is even different than I saw you handle a Jacob Evans. You know, even different than I saw you handle a Nemanja Nedović. You know, like, it's the way you are with the guys are different. And I think it can probably be contributed to some of your dealings with Tyler, Hero.
Yes.
And having to handle him, Duncan. You know, so here it is. You got Jimmy. You got Bam, who's a... Bam is like D-Book to me. Like, they kind of young OGs. Like, yes. Young, but,
yes,
you know, experienced and understands a little more. And so not quite Bam, but like Tyler and Duncan is more so in the Jordan Poole category, you know, and guys of that nature, and you're handling them a little differently than you did before.
It's 100% true. I think I've learned, and I've tried to learn through every experience that I had. You know, like, I made some mistakes in the past, and I think that's the biggest part of it. And then I got people around me that will, you know, like, you know, Rudy's my man, but he'll flat out tell me, like, you know, you're full of shit, like, you're not being a leader right now. You know, you're supposed to do this and that. And I'll accept it and then go back and say, what could I have done differently? And I think it's just helped me, you know, even with, you know, our runs from, you know, 15 and 19, some things I got wrong. And then I would retrace my steps and say, okay, next time that comes up, I know how to handle it. So, like, Jordan Poole is like one of my favorite guys. And, you know, he's an emotional player. And I was an emotional player. So sometimes I got to place myself in his shoes and was like, he wants to win. And he's trying to get his stuff off. And you're like, sometimes you tell him something and he may not react the right way. But I had to look at myself at 22. I was reacting kind of the same way. So I was like, okay, put yourself in his shoes. And I think I've tried to do that more so than any other time, just seeing it from my perception. You're just trying to see it in his view and say, okay, how would I want Kevin Ollie? How would I want Aaron McKee to help me in those situations? So patience is a big part of it. But I think over time, they start understanding that you really rock with them. Like, no, bro, like, I really love you. Like, you're really my man, like, for life now. And then once you get past that barrier, then they're open to any type of, you know, constructive criticism.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like I said, I've been watching that and just trying to pick up on it. You know, I think one big thing for me is in Jonathan Kuminga, who's obviously one of our young guys, the seventh pick, is I'm trying to take it upon myself to do all that I can to make sure he has the success that he should have. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a kid, who, if I'm not mistaken, come over from the Congo at 13 years old, you know, and his journey is well documented, so I'm not going to sit here and go through his journey. But now at 19, he's in the NBA. You know, he has probably making $3.5 million a year. And
no, man, he had like five. It's a lot.
Like, making a lot of money. But I'm trying to take it upon myself to figure out how is it that I have to lead him, right? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things for me and that I'm figuring out with that is like, Jonathan Kuminga is not really a peer of mine.
Right.
Like, he's 12 years younger than me. And I'm 31 years old. He's 19 years old. He's not really my peer.
Right.
And one of the things that I've been trying to do is when dealing with JK, view him more as my child than my brother, you know, view him more as, or a younger brother than a brother that I'm gonna hang with, that I grew up with, right?
Right. Like, right.
View him more in that light as opposed to the light that I would view you in, you know? So the way I may say something to you, I probably can't say that to him, because I wouldn't say that to DJ, right?
Correct,
like,
correct,
and so that's something, and it's adjustment for me, because here I am, 31 years old now. The last 2 years, we've sucked bad, and as opposed to leading guys to where they need to go in their career, you're just trying to teach them how to win games. Like, losing is miserable, and you're just trying to, and so there are certain things that gets lost within that. And I'm starting to figure that out with JK and really trying to teach him everything that I can to see him have the success they should have. And then you have a young guy like Moses, who is one of those old souls, right? Like, just temperament's different. Like, temperament is just like he's been in the league forever.
Yep.
Just kind of moves around a little differently. And so the contrast is there. But speaking of the young guys and our team, you obviously sat out last night. I think you've missed the last five or six games.
Yep.
What was your assessment? Because I know what my assessment was in last night's game and how much better we could have been and how much better we will be.
Right.
But what was your assessment and what went wrong in that game?
So I said it to Juan in like the second quarter, because the second half I was getting treatment. So I was in the back watching from the team. First half I was up there up close. I was seeing every play we were writing down, seeing the coach subs, what we were doing. You know, like, the first thing I noticed was the atmosphere. And now we're getting back to the old ways of everywhere we go, that atmosphere is going to be just like that, which was incredible. Yes. So now you get to see, like, every team's going to play their best. And as you know, when we get everybody's best, we will be the best prepared team come playoffs, because we have the best experience. So I always enjoy that to people out of town. I'm like, yo, I like playing. Like, we might lose more games than we should have. Like, maybe we have 20 losses. And I'm like, oh, we should only have 15. We left five games. So I'm like, no, we got the best of everybody every night. We are the most prepared going into the playoffs. So I enjoy that. But you also get to see what type of guys step up to the challenge, or you get to see their energy when it's a big game. And I saw Otto Porter. Well, he looked like he was ready. Like, he got in the game, first shot, bang. Missed a shot. He was like, I can't wait till the next shot come. I ain't missing. And he just kept hitting timely shots and kept the game right within, you know, a basket, a possession or two for us the whole night. First half, I thought, you know, it was kind of like a filling out process. I like the Phoenix. I like their energy coming into the game. Like, it was like a playoff game to them. And I don't think, not to say that we didn't match their energy, I felt like we did a good job of rising to that quicker than we normally have. Because you know how we are. We get free flowing and, you know, we mess around and be down 15. We've been down 12 or more, like six times this year, seven times this year, and came back and won them all. And we didn't let that happen because, like, oh, this is like a playoff game. Yeah. Second, third possession, like, let's rise to the occasion. So everybody kind of stepped it up. I think second half, as we kind of let go of the, we kind of let it go a little bit. We start letting them get comfortable. We start letting a few guys get to their dominant hand. As I was talking about in the text chain this morning, we let him get to his dominant hand and he start controlling the game the way he does everywhere he's gone. And he's, you know, the ultimate competitor and he knows how to win. And then, you know, offensive rebounds killed us in the first half. Obviously, our Achilles heel is turnovers. You know, we had some, we had like live ball turnovers. Like I always say, when the young guys go into the games, look, man, we up 15, 20, we can't lose. If you just let the shot clock go to zero every possession, we still win by 10.
Yes.
So don't take quick, dumb shots or don't turn it over. And last night, you know, we never really got to a great look. You know what I'm saying? We did have a few, like you had a few layups that you've been making all year and you pushed the pace and you've been finishing them amazing. And I'm watching you practice. I'm like, damn, that's just going to be big time. It just didn't happen for us last night. Yeah. Steph just didn't have his normal legs. Because even he said, I saw one shot. I'm like, that's good. And it was the air ball. Then he shot another shot. He was like, that's good. He was like, damn, that was an air ball. I thought I was making it.
Yeah.
We didn't have those nights in the NBA. I think we could have did it more of a split cuts. That was the key. We could have made them move a little bit different than what we've been showing them. Because as you know, when we had KD, we had a cheat code. We needed to bucket, just get out of his way, you know. And that the next level for us is we get a little stagnant. We take some quick shots. We rely on jump shots. We can get to our split cuts, you know what I'm saying? Especially when Big Fella gets back, which is, we're talking about the young fellas. I can't wait to simplify his game. I think that's a major stepping stone for Wiseman is simplifying the game of basketball. And once you simplify it, that's when everything else opens up. Instead of trying to do everything at one time, it's like a startup. You got to focus on one little thing and then grow out from there. So I told Juan in the second quarter, I'm like, bro, we have so far to go. And we're still like, we're still one of the best teams, top two, three teams in the league. Like it's scary, but it's not given. Like we got to go get it. So
I agree 100%. I think, you know, like you said, in that game, I'm not sure who was worse, Steph or myself. We were both pretty bad. Wiggins probably being a little better than us two were. And yet with 2 minutes and 40 seconds left, I got a left-hand layup to cut the lead to one.
Yep.
You know? So I like where we are. Also, like you said, I love the way that guys rose to the occasion because I'm not going to play that bad. Steph's not going to play that bad. Wiggs is not going to play that bad. Mm-hmm. When Jordan Poole came out hitting shots, like he was hitting shots, I kept saying literally every shot he hit, show up, young fella.
Yep.
He like, show up, young fella.
And he just let the game come to him. Like, he didn't take any – he might have had one shot where we like, there go that Jordan Poole shot. But he was, like, on point. He got to the foul line. That's what I've been on him about this whole year. It's like, yo, when you making shots, you should get to the line. You should have six free throw attempts. Because you making shots, they own you. And he was just very patient. One time was 3 seconds on the clock. He pump fake, let a guy pass him, took a breath. Shot it right before the buzzer. And I'm like, normally he would have rushed it. I'm like, yo, I'm just seeing growth and more growth. Chioza came in and hit a big three. We got, like, that's one issue we have. That's not an issue. It's just our depth. And then that's something that Phoenix has as well. So it'd be interesting to see how, you know, we match up come April.
Yeah, no, that's great. And as I said before, you coming on this show, there was part of me that wants to hear even – or wants to hear more of this than basketball. And that is Andre. Basketball is like his half day job, but he's a venture capitalist and probably spends more time on that today than basketball, just for the simple fact When you look at managing your body, right, like not you're not on the court all day every day like you were when you were 24 years old. You're more precise in what you do. Okay, I'm getting on the court. I'm going hard for 1 hour. That's it. You know, I'm making my lift. I'm doing my body work. But when you're a venture capitalist, and the way that you are moving in that space, like that's a 24-hour thing. You know, like you're sending emails if you're awake at 1 a.m. Like, and that doesn't stop. But I have had the opportunity to learn a ton from you and watch all the moves that you're making in that space. And I think it's incredible. But one of the things that I really wanted you to come on and educate me on, and not only myself, but our audience as well, is you've gotten really deep into the NFT space. Tell us more about that. Explain NFTs for our audience that don't know what an NFT is. And then also just tell me more about you in that space and what it is that you see going forward and why you're so interested into the space and how long have you been at it?
So, I mean, to try to break it down, you know, as quickly as possible, because it's a rabbit hole and I'm in Discord. I was on Discord today for like 45 minutes. People are like, yo, you really in here? I'm like, yeah, I'm studying. So NFT is, you know, non-fungible token. So essentially think of it as a digital collectible. You know, like we collect so many things, you know, and I tell people all the time, like Warren Buffett is one of the wealthiest people on earth because he started collecting stamps and coins at like age 4 or 5. Like he had a passion for collecting coins, which is currency. So just like we enjoy immersing ourselves in the game of basketball and studying basketball, he studied money. And then he had an uncle who traded on the stockroom floor, and then his pops was in politics and, you know, with policy and how money moves, taxes, all those things. Like that was his world. So it was no surprise that he just accumulated a lot of wealth. So we accumulate different things in different worlds. You know, how did eBay start? eBay started with collecting Beanie Babies. You know what I mean? And then Amazon started with people who were just lovers of books.
Yep.
They were able to scale those platforms out into, you know, some of the e-commerce we talk about today is, you know, everybody's going into the e-commerce space and from different ways. So NFTs is similar in terms of, you know, you collecting things digitally. So it started out with NBA Top Shot. I got a call from, I forgot who it was. You know, it's an interesting company. It's this great founder who has a great track record of starting up companies in this manner. And obviously, like JaVale McGee, got to give him a lot of credit. You know, people know him as JaVale McGee, but as you know, like this dude is one of the high IQ guys on the planet, not just in the NBA, but this dude is smart. So he was talking about
super smart.
Bitcoin was like 9,000. And he was like, yo, it's going to get to 15, get some Bitcoin. And I'm like, I ain't really ready yet. You know, the things just got to 60, 65, you know, this past summer. We all know what's happening. But, you know, when you talk about cryptocurrencies and a blockchain, and how that whole space works with the ledger, which is your receipts. Everything works more efficiently. Everything's more accountable. You know, they figured out that they would start in the financial sector in terms of introducing the blockchain because they knew if they can get the finance side right, everything else would follow behind it. It's just like eBay started with Beanie Babies and everything came behind it. So that's just this entry to market. And NBA Top Shot obviously was big for the not just NBA, but for the NFT space because people were very excited to start, you know, collecting moments. This is like a trading card. So people was like, well, I can just go screenshot an image on my phone. What's the difference? And I'm like, yeah, you can print a picture off your printer. That don't mean you own the actual trading card, you know, and then
absolutely.
It shows who owns it on the ledger. So there's actually a receipt say, I own this. So there's many different things you can do with owning a digital asset. You know, one thing that artists, they make more money in the NFT space than painting a picture. You know, Picasso paints a picture, sells it one time. And, you know, most artists don't make money while they're alive.
Mm-hmm.
They sell that picture one time and that's the only time they make money off of it. Well, actually NFTs, there's a 6% fee every time it's being moved or sold. So the artist gets paid even though they don't own that picture throughout its course of its life. And then, you know, obviously you got trust, which goes into DAOs, which is a whole nother rabbit hole on the ledger in the blockchain space. That's key too. You know, you got a few like Spencer Dinwiddie is just amazing when he speaks on it. He's heavily into the, he wanted to get paid in, he wanted his whole NBA contract in crypto, which you can't do, but there's a way to do it. You know, I'm working on something right now where I could be compensated through Bitcoin. So I you see how far I digress because it's so immersive. But the NFT space right now is a lot of digital images. It's a lot of it's almost like a secret society. You look at Bored Ape Yacht Clubs. It's like, why would I buy a picture of a gorilla for $500,000? And it's almost like its own secret society where you get access to a certain club in Miami, LA, New York. Like, you got to have this. Your phone is your wallet, and it shows you own it, and it shows up on Ledger. Like, I get access to this party, or I get access to all the merch first. You know, it's like a pair of Jordans. You know, they make 10,000 pairs of Jordans, and you know, mm-hmm. it's 350 million people in America, and in 50 million sneakerheads. It's only 10,000 shoes. So people buy them up and then they resell them because it's just a hot commodity to have. It's the same thing. It's just a pair of shoes. You know what I mean? It's going to wear out. But what you going to do? Just leave them there? You can't wear them. They lose the value. Same thing with, you know, people like collecting digital photos that other people don't have. It kind of shows your social economic status within the economy or within our worlds we live in. And that's what it's eventually going to go to, where you're talking about the metaverse, where you're talking about Web 3.0, where we're all going to exist in this virtual world and we're going to express ourselves through our avatar. So your avatar is going to be like, you know, the person that people see. You know, we're going to slowly but surely start away from each other and then just coming back in small groups. But we're all going to, like, Microsoft is big on the workspace metaverse where you can work from home, but you put the headset on, but you see your coworkers working in real time and your surroundings look a little different. It's not home because, you know, there's that layer that thinks you're at work. And then Facebook, which is called Meta now, they just put they spent like $10 billion this year already in the space, which tells you everything you need to know. You know, when these large companies start pumping out billions of dollars into a space, you know, it's like the innovator's dilemma, but it's not, because they know what's coming and they've disrupted so many different things. They know something's going to come after them, so they got to be ready before it hits them. And, you know, Square just changed his name, Jack Dorsey. You know, he was CEO of Twitter and Square. He just changed the name of Square, which is one of the largest fintech companies in the world, to Block, which is, you know, blockchain. So it's just moving so crazy, and we're just trying to stay ahead of it. And it's exciting, you know. This is the last thing I'll say. You know, it started with Web.0, which was, you know, platforms creating and publishing and monetizing and owning everything. And then Web 2.0, which is where we're in right now, you see creators creating everything, you know, but we create content, and where does it go? It goes to Facebook, it goes to Instagram, it goes to TikTok, and we don't participate in that value add. The same way, you know, the Warriors are worth $450 million when Steph's there, and then when you get there, when Clay's there, now they're worth $5 billion. But if there's a sale, do we participate in the accumulation of value in that sale? Zero, right? So there's no ownership. So Web 3.0 is about creators creating and creators having, you know, they actually own, you know, everything that exists that they're creating, which is we've never seen before. So we're in exciting times, and it's just for us to try to continue to spread the knowledge, because obviously African Americans, we always the last one to get access to anything. And then we're always, you know, the system set up for us to, you know, be at the bottom of the totem pole, because, you know, you have to have cheap labor, and we've always been the ones to have cheap labor. So part of me being excited is to take all this information, put it together, package it the right way, and give it back to our community so we can own it and we can learn it and we can start having leadership. You know, we can be the, you know, the coach, the GM, the owner. And then when you're in those positions of power, I guess you can call it, but you start hiring and identifying who's good that you know, because you hire who you know and you hire what you're comfortable with. And that's why we've never been in a position to be in those job titles that can bring more people that look like, you know, the manager.
So I know nothing. I don't own any NFTs, or where do I start?
Okay, it's like the easiest way you need to do, it's really three things. You know, get a Coinbase account, what's the word I'm looking for? I have to let everyone know that I am an investor in Coinbase, right? So, but you get a Coinbase account. There's other places. I think FTX, which just did it, was still with Steph, but, you know, Coinbase account. Then you get a MetaMask account. So Coinbase is where you buy your crypto, which, you know, all NFTs, not all, majority run off Ethereum, right? And then there's Solana-based, there's Tezos-based, but for the most part, it's Ethereum. So you go to Coinbase, and then you link your bank account, and then you put however much money you want to get Ethereum. Then you get a MetaMask, which is a wallet. So it's like a digital wallet that basically you can buy NFTs. So you need the MetaMask, or there's other digital wallets as well, but I use MetaMask, not an investor, MetaMask. But once you have MetaMask, you go on OpenSea. Coinbase has an NFT platform, and it's a test pilot right now. But for the most part, OpenSea is where people go, where all the NFTs are listed. And you use MetaMask to buy from OpenSea. And you also need Discord as well. Discord is when you see a project that you like, you go to Discord, you go to that project chat room, and you talk to the community. And you can kind of get a good feel if a project's going to do well or not, because you have authentic people having conversations about, all right, what makes this NFT valuable? Is it a money grab? They just trying to sell something real quick and get out? It's a bunch of those. Or is there a roadmap? Is there a utility here saying, when I have this digital asset, what comes with it? You know, do I get access to this? Do I get access to that? Am I able to meet this person? Am I able to meet that person? And then you see a lot of celebrities that are in and out. So you just got to be careful. So you still got to do your homework. It's just like investing in, you know, a company that may not be as well known, and you just got to track it and see what they're doing every quarter. So you just, those four things help you: Coinbase, MetaMask, OpenSea, and Discord.
It's interesting. I appreciate you sharing that knowledge because it's, like you said, I think it's very important. You know, when you speak on JaVale McGee and Bitcoin, I appreciate you saying that about JaVale, because he is probably one of the most misunderstood people in the NBA.
Sure.
Because of the JaVale McGee, you know, and all of those things, people think JaVale McGee is dumb.
Right.
And like you said, he is probably one of the top five smartest guys in the NBA. And top five may be selling them short. You know, it just, you know, I mean, JaVale McGee is like one of those people that he's so smart, sometimes it can fly by you, or it's hard to understand him because he's so smart. And so I have an appreciation for that. But speaking of Bitcoin, I remember Shamath told me years ago, man, Bitcoin probably had to be worth $300-$400 of Bitcoin. He said, take 1% of your net worth. This had to be 8-7 years ago. Take 1% of your net worth and put it into Bitcoin.
Yep.
I'm like, Bitcoin, what is that? Right? And he starts breaking down to me what Bitcoin is. And at the time, I didn't really have any money.
Right.
So I couldn't even process what putting 1% of the little money that I did have into anything, right? Like, I don't have any money to put into that. I should have put it in there, but I didn't. But nonetheless, you know, it is what it is, and you live and you learn. And that's kind of where I am in the space, is just continuing to learn, you know, trying to get more active in the space. But also, I want to thoroughly understand it before I just get super active into it, you know. And so that's what I've been trying to do.
I will,
go ahead.
The funny thing is, the best thing that happened to me is my account got hacked. I got robbed. Like, it's funny that it happened like that. But so if you click, like, warning for everybody, don't click on anything in Discord. Like, don't click anything, like, in terms of, like, links, right? So I'm just trying to learn. You know how we are. Like, we know how to work hard. We watch hours and hours of film. So it's nothing to us to study. Like, it's easy for us to pick up on stuff. That's why people say, like, you know, like, athletes, we can transition to different places because, like, we just learn how to work hard and, you know, obtain information. So I'm just learning, clicking on stuff, and I clicked on the wrong thing. Somebody, you know, got access to my account, and then I accidentally screenshot my passwords to my wallet, and then they go into my cloud, got that too, boom, take my stuff, right? But that right there, I ended up losing like $25,000, but I talked to somebody in the community. Community showed up for me and showed me how to get everything back. I would get everything back to square, whatever. I still lost, but he was like, think about it as you just went to school and you just got your degree in NFTs. And I was like, wow. Because now I'm able to teach other people, do this, do that, move like this, move like that. All right, watch out for this, watch out for that. Even with like some of the projects that aren't that good, I got some projects that's like, I wouldn't have did that if I could have do it again. But now I just give it that same information to other people. So I say the best thing to do is just buy one thing, just like watch it. That experience alone will teach you so much than, you know, one person can tell you.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it, man. And You know, I think for me, when you first came out here and you came to the Golden State Warriors, I remember like everything that you was talking about. Like, I love the tech space. I want to do this in the space. And to see where you've actually grown in that space is like incredible. Like, you're well respected in that space. You're well known in that space. And you've had some investments that's performed, several mm-hmm. unicorns that's performed really well. As you now you're, you know, in the last couple years of your career, from just even listening to you say, oh, maybe last year was it. You know, in the last couple years of your career winding down, obviously venture is probably what's next for you. But what does that look like for you moving forward?
Yeah, it's really exciting. You know, I think, you know, without giving too much that hasn't been announced yet, like everything's, you know, sort of coming to fruition. And I had a really good conversation with one of my favorite private equity guys. He's not really a venture capitalist, but a private equity guy. And I don't want to put his name out there. Like, he enjoys being anonymous, you know, like we want to be like them and most of them want to be like us, but he's the one who just enjoys, no one knows his name. And he was like, listen, you got to take, and I think all basketball players should do this. Like, we had so much success and like, we were just like, all right, where's the next mountain to climb? And we forget to give ourselves flowers. You know, that's the cultural thing to say, like, give the flowers while they're still here. And it's like, we forget to bask in our own success. Like, we let so many voices outside the game not let us enjoy the success we had. Like, let's keep it 100. Like, you remember, like, we remember vividly where we came from. Like, that room I lived in when I was in, like, second grade. Like, I can't even walk in there right now. I'm like, I gotta, it's like crazy, like, how you grow up like that, right? Like, yeah. We accomplished a whole lot as African-American men. Like, the odds are already stacked up against us. Like, we beat the life expectancy already. Like, no one even says that. So he said that, like, yo, where you came from 6 years ago in the tech space to where you are now, like, no one would have predicted that. Like, you came a long way already and you're so focused on the goal and you think you got so far to go. It's like, no, you came a long way. You got to start enjoying that and embracing it. So I try to do that. But at the same time, like, we're just wired to keep competing and we're wired to just like, what's next? What's next? Like,
absolutely.
I'm trying to get somewhere where, you know, nobody thought we can go. Where are they at? You know, they, like, we can get to the NBA, but how many of us are owners, or how many of us, you know, have accumulated this much amount of wealth? Because it's not about how much money I got in the bank, but it is, because this much amount of money in the bank is real change to my community. Because it's like, mm-hmm. 50,000 here, 100,000 there. We call them Band-Aids over bullet wounds. Like, they really don't fix the problems. But when you start talking about endowments, you putting the right infrastructure in place to where you never have to touch the money and you can run organizations and foundations just off the interest alone of the endowment you put in place. Now that's real change. Now you got a school, you know, Jalen Rose has done it. A beautiful, beautiful academy. LeBron James has done it, you know, and it's, we don't even talk about those things enough. Those are generational changes and providing that right infrastructure. So the next group of folks behind us are in a much better position, situation that we are in. And then in turn, they do the same thing. And that's how you build that group economics, as David West was always talking about. Yeah. So, you know, in the VC space, I got a few things that will be coming out in the next couple months on the VC side, even on the private equity side, even on the, you know, the athlete side, that I'm really excited about, and just, you know, dotting my I's and crossing my T's and just, you know, buttoning everything up.
No, it's beautiful to see. And like I said, as someone who watches you, right here, I just want to say thank you for the knowledge that you've shared with me, for the path that you've laid out for all of us. I speak for myself, but I can also speak for guys in that locker room, because I know how we all look at you, Steph Curry. I know how his business has ran so incredibly now. And a part of that was watching you, you know, and the things that you were doing. So definitely appreciate that. And obviously, we're on an off day, so I don't want to take up much more of your time. I appreciate you coming on. I do have two more basketball questions before I let you out of here. Yes. And the first one is, I know for me, I'm looking at this team, and as I said, we kind of got that mix of younger and experience, and it feel right. Team feel good. It feel right. Like, the aura is right. The vibe is great. The coaching staff has been incredible. I mean, the training staff, like, it just feel right. Like, do you feel or see anything? Because I know I, like, this feel real 2015-16-ish for me. Like, that's how it feel for me.
The funny thing is like, coming in, like, I knew, like, that Miami Heat culture had me, like, locked in. So I'm already ready to go. Like, all right, I got to bring that Miami Heat kind of vibe. Like, make sure y'all, we really locked in every day. But to say that I could predict this would be a lie. Like, yeah. I didn't, you don't know. Like, most of the time you can, you know, like, although, like, when we had success, the first year we didn't quite know until we
yes.
won. But after that, we're like, well, we about to run through these dudes the next 4 years. As long as we together, we're running through people. Mm-hmm. This year coming back, you're just like, you're still trying to figure it out. But then you start feeling the energy. Like you said, the coaching staff, you start seeing the young guys. And then you see that video of Clay the other day.
Yes.
But you see the clay, I'm like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
Now you locked in even more. Like, yo, let's not waste no time. Let's not throw nothing away. Like, let's take advantage of all these moments. Like, we all know this ain't guaranteed. And everyone, for whatever they said, we had a really good team. Just because you got a good team don't mean you can win it. Like, you still got to win it. Right. Yeah, I understand how precious these moments are and what we got ahead of us. So I'm like super, like, you just wake up and you can't wait to get to work. And people don't understand, like, being a professional athlete, there's so many things that come with it that can, like, stray you away from the joy of your job. And it's just, like, becomes a drag sometimes. But when you're excited to go to work, like, it's an incredible feeling, man. Like, and it's just every day is just, like, even when you're working hard, it's not work, hard work. It's just like, yo, we getting better.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's funny. I said that to Loon yesterday. Like, Loon, I just enjoy coming to work again, man. Like, it just feel good.
Yep.
To come here. And speaking of Clay, when I saw that video, when they showed us that, like, what the hell? Like, and what people don't know is the video that they saw, he hit his first six shots of the scrimmage. Like, yeah. And as we know, Q, who was up here with us for like a week or so in training camp, like, you guard him, you getting all them buckets, they come in bunches. Like, we all saw the clips and we saw it broke up. If he hit six straight, that was six of the first 10 possessions. Because you know Clay, he hit that first one.
Yeah.
Clay not going to let you just lose him and he hitting shots.
Yep.
He going to get the ball. So you know those six buckets absolutely came within the first six of the first 10 possessions of that scrimmage. And that had me so excited, man, seeing him playing like that. Obviously, we're playing well, but just on his journey, man, it's beautiful to see. So I am extremely excited about Clay coming back. I know we all are. And yes, we are playing great. But you add Clay Thompson back to the fold and then Wiseman back to the fold. Like, mm-hmm. I like where we at. But lastly, what I want to ask you, and I think this question is really near and dear to me because as someone who's had the opportunity to share the court with you for 7 years now, this is year seven, I think. I know. And then also sharing the court with Bam Adebayo this summer, the one thing he said and the one thing we both obviously agree on is, like, playing with Andre, it just makes the game easier, right? Like, it makes the game easier for you in understanding your impact and what you bring to the game. And now you start to talk about the All-Star appearances, the championships, finals MVP, defensive teams, all these things. It bothers me when people don't say you're a lock for a Hall of Famer. Like, that bothers me, and I don't understand. I understand it because what I understand is that people don't understand the game of basketball.
Right.
And so
right.
I understand it from that perspective of, like, y'all don't really understand the game of basketball, so you technically don't know what you're watching.
Mm-hmm.
But it bothers me when people don't say Andre's Iguodala is a lock for the Hall of Fame because – you know, we see a lot of guys who can jump out the gym. You being one of those guys, obviously not as jumping as high as you are. Who's jumping that high at your age and all the miles that you have on your body? But you still get up higher than most guys. And for most guys, that's a hindrance. Like, you see guys that can jump and they're dumber than a bag of rocks. Like they don't really understand the game of basketball because they've just ran somewhere and jumped all their life. And whereas you happen to be one of the smartest guys in the league jumping like that, it's so rare does it bother you like it bothered me when people not saying you're a lock for the Hall of Fame?
I don't think so, because like I think I said it a couple times, like I really couldn't see how good, like I couldn't see how good Steph was when I was playing with him. Like, I know how good you were because we kind of in the same lane. Is like, we know how good we are at what we do, and we know it's very high level. Well, what Steph does is like, it's loud and you see it. But yes, he's so focused on trying to get to like what's next. Like, we're like proactive players where we gonna get there before you do. Yeah. So it's like one thing with Wiggs, I'm like, Wiggs, like he's been really good defensively this year. And this is when I knew I was kind of good. Like, I never like saying I'm good, like I'm nice. But this one I knew like I was doing things the right way. When Wiggs was like, yo, what are some things you like to do when you guard LeBron? I was like, whoa. I'm like, bro, you got way more ability than me. But then I had to like, okay, this is a good thing. And then I give him some pointers on like, yo, it's really not about stopping him because you can't. It's just about beating him to the spot before he gets there. And that starts when Steph shoots. So as soon as Steph shot the ball, I would be looking for LeBron like, all right, where is he at and what point of attack will he be taking the ball out of bounds? That's the first thing that went off on my mind. So for me, it was just like, I wasn't really able to see things like, you know, how good Steph was, you know, so I couldn't like really appreciate. So that goes back to like, you know, I'm upset about how people see the game. Like, as you know, we identify the journalists who know the game and who don't. And not even journalists, just people in general. And we realize most don't know the game that well because, you know, so
absolutely.
So then it doesn't bother me. And then I always say, like, I talked about the top 75 list. I always say, like, there's guys in the Hall of Fame that I feel like I think I'm better than him. And I'm not trying to be cocky. Like, I think I'm better than that guy. He's in the Hall of Fame. But there are guys who are not in the Hall of Fame that are better than me.
Yeah.
That says a lot. And I'm just like, hey, man, it just is what it is. You just, if it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And like I said before, like, the impact our generation of basketball players are going to have, or it just gets bigger and bigger through each generation, which shows that there is, you know, there's maturity. It shows evolution. We're becoming better as humans. Like, the things we're doing off the court are going to have a much bigger impact for not just basketball players, but just, you know, Black kids in general. And I think that's what we should be most proud about. And like, that really goes back to like you having a conversation with Bob yesterday. I'm like, bro, like the impact that we have outside the game is just, it's just crazy.
Absolutely. No, man, I definitely appreciate it. The vet, Andre Iguodala, Hall of Famer in my book, champ. I appreciate everything you've done for me, including obviously coming on this podcast today, but goes way beyond this podcast, just in my career, in my life. The things you've taught me, I'll always be somebody I'll look to, I'll call upon when I need some advice, when I need somebody to talk to. I appreciate you, brother. Thank you for coming on.
No, thank you, man. Appreciate you. Proud of you too, man. We got to say that more often, man. Appreciate
Thank you, bro. Likewise, our venture capitalist brother who causing havoc over there and figuring it out, man. Definitely appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Man, what an incredible conversation just to have with Andre. Obviously, I have the opportunity to have those conversations often and really just sit and soak up the knowledge and learn. As he is one of the guys that I truly respect, the way he goes about his business, the way he has capitalized on being in such a hotbed of technology out here in Silicon Valley, I think it's incredible. And so always honored to just take in some of the knowledge and some of the advice that he gives, which he does often, which he doesn't have to. So I'm very thankful and appreciative of that. So again, to my big brother, Andre, thank you for coming on the Draymond Green Show. Before we wrap, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the late, great Virgil Abloh. He's for what he's done for our culture. Number one, rest in peace. And to his family, I send my thoughts, my prayers, well wishes, and most importantly, my love. Losing a loved one is never easy. And, you know, losing a loved one at 41 years old, it's tough. And obviously none of us know the time, nor the day, nor the place. But nonetheless, it doesn't make it easier. And obviously now we all know for the last two and a half years, he was battling cancer. And number one, to continue doing what he was doing while going through his journey and his fight with cancer just speaks to the guy that he is, that he was, and speaks to why he was able to do what he was able to do. I mean, you have a guy now who I just saw today, they have some display of some Mercedes car that he designed. We know he designed Drake's plane. We know he designed watches for Drake. Obviously, Off-White, Pyrex, going all the way back. And then on to Louis Vuitton and what he's able to do there as a black man, going to a brand like Louis Vuitton and being the head of the creative design for Louis Vuitton, owned by LVMH, a black man from Chicago. It's unheard of. We lost a great one. We lost a guy who has changed culture, who has changed the way we look at fashion, who's changed the way art, fashion, music are intertwined. You're talking about a guy who's shown us he's an artist and the design things that he does. He's shown us he's an artist through the music aspect and his DJing and things that he does. And obviously, through his creation of the brands that he's created and the collections that he's put out with, that he's been in charge of at Louis Vuitton. Just an incredible creative. I never had the opportunity of meeting Virgil, but I know from my fashion sense and the things that I like, he had a huge impact on that and just the things that he put out. And so, man, it's a tough one. You know, a guy who's broken down barriers for creatives, especially African-American, black creatives. He's broken down a lot of walls, broken down some barriers, and looking forward to the creatives of today carrying on his legacy. You know, Salehe Bembury, Heron Preston, Don C., and the list goes on and on. Creators, creatives that continue to shape our culture. So I'm looking forward to Jerry Lorenzo. You know, I'm looking forward to those guys continuing to carry out his legacy, carry on his legacy. Obviously, we'll continue to see the imprint that he left on the fashion world. But man, gone way too soon. Virgil Abloh, I send my love to his family, his loved ones, his friends, anyone that he's impacted their life who feels that loss. I send my love, my thoughts, and my prayers. Man, it's a tough one, but third episode of the Draymond Green Show. Thank everybody for tuning in. See you guys next week. Peace and love.